This is Ashley Hodge with the Sikkim 365 podcast. I'm here with Grayson Grunhafer, and we're going to talk about the Baylor victory over Prairie View A&M tonight, 91-80. Grayson, it's good to have you on this podcast. It's basketball centric. You were at the Farrell Center tonight, right?
Yeah, I was sitting courtside. I was on the court. I did a little video, and then of course went to the after press conference as well. So yeah, it was good. It was good to see the Bears. My first time at a game this season, so it was nice to see kind of what everyone's been talking about. I've watched the other two, but it was good to see it in person.
Well, you know what? I had some mixed emotions during that second half. One of my emotions was, I cannot believe that I spent money to rent a house in Florida over the week of Thanksgiving. That was when the score was closing to 2 to 4 points. And I was like, what am I doing? Why am I going to Florida to watch this team play? And then, you know, a few minutes later, I was like, hey, we're good again. This is fun. This is exciting. So, you know, it was definitely one of those games where, like most games, you know, you just have ebbs and flows. But Baylor pulled away with a late run. I thought Jared Butler was sensational. I'm excited about that guy. Man, he is a lot better than I expected. What's your main takeaways from this game?
Yeah, no, well, he was actually the first guy I had written down as a guy that we need to talk about, because there was a stretch in the second half where, and I know everyone wants to talk about Tristan Clark, where he, you know, Tristan really turned it on, but Jared Butler really turned it on in that second half. I believe he had 6 points during that run that Baylor had to kind of push the lead out late in that game. So he was awesome. You know, taking over a game like that as a true freshman is really special. And, you know, he's kind of in an unfair situation because he's having to start as a true freshman while Mekhi Mason is still, you know, recovering. But Jared Butler was awesome. And, you know, I think he is the reason why Baylor was able to actually pull away in this game and win this game. And I believe he was their leading scorer as well. Yeah, he was. So, yeah, great game for him, I felt like.
Yeah, I looked at the stats of he and Tristan Clark and King McClure and Devontae Bandu, and they shot the ball extremely well. They were, I wrote it down here. Let's see. They were like 25 for 36 from the field, 10 for 18 from three, 14 for 16 from the foul line. So that's really good play from those four guys. That's a lot of offense. And the exciting thing about that is we've got two guys coming, and Mario Kegler and Mekhi Mason, that I think are two of our top three or four offensive players. So we should get a lot of help from those guys when they get on the court as well. So this could be a really good offensive team. Now, that's the positive. You know, and Tristan Clark, man, he is really efficient. You know, he is, when he gets the ball in the paint with a deep post position, he's able to score with either hand. He's hitting his free throws. You know, he's doing some really good things. I'm excited about what he's bringing to the table. All right, now defense, that's a different story. We got to talk about some problems on the defensive end. I mean, what I noticed is that they allowed a lot of those Prairie View A&M guards to get dribble penetration right by them and, you know, just create a lot of problems in the paint. And then the other thing was...
I saw the same thing.
Yeah, rebounding.
No, I actually brought that up to Coach Drew in the press conference because, I mean, and it wasn't like there were a lot of screens. It was just simple isolation drives
right
in the lane, and then the Baylor defender having to suck in, they passed it out, hit a wide open three, or the guard would either get an easy look or draw a foul, and that's kind of what we saw to Tristan Clark once again with three fouls, and, you know, the guards aren't doing a good job protecting him by allowing, you know, straight-line drives like that. That's not going to work in Big 12 play.
Yeah, that's a really good point. You know, a lot of times when you see a big in foul trouble, you automatically assume that they're foul prone, but sometimes it can be on the guards for not doing a good job of keeping their man in front of them. You know, that creates lots of problems for bigs that are trying to come over and help. That was a small team we played. You know, they only had one guy over 6'5", I believe. that they played, and we only out-rebounded them by one. I certainly think that's an issue that we need to get straightened out. We need to be a dominant rebounding team when we play teams like that, because we know we're going to have problems against bigger teams. You know, we're a little bit smaller this year than we have been in the past, and you know, certainly we can't afford to have a game like this where we're clearly bigger and, you know, have, you know, a lot more size and strength to us, and yet we only out-rebounded by one.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And, you know, another thing that I just thought about when I was watching the game, I mean, you were so right about how efficient Tristan Clark was, but I'm thinking to myself, okay, so he got 9 free throws, but he only shot 5 shots, and he was 5 for 5. I'm trying to figure out, you know, with that size advantage and, you know, just watching the game, every time he got the ball, good things were happening. And whether it was him passing and finding someone or him drawing a foul or him getting a bucket, I just think, I don't know what it is, but it doesn't feel like they're feeding him quite like they did, you know, a Jonathan Motley or a Joe, you know, last year, or a Terry Maston. And I think as the season progresses, he's going to need to be a guy that they need to get touches to, especially against teams where there's a mismatch. I just didn't quite understand why it wasn't just feed him every time down the court and allow him to make a play for everyone else.
Well, no question. And, you know, part of that's on him too. He's got to demand the ball. You know, one of my pet peeves about post players is that sometimes they just don't get their body wide enough. They don't give a big enough target to the offensive passer. You know, as a post player, you've got to give a wide, aggressive target, and you've got to seal your man off. You've got to, you know, get your hands out, you know, showing them exactly where you want the ball to be. You know, who does a pretty good job of that is Matthew Meyer, who wants the ball. I mean, you know, that guy wants the ball every single possession, but, you know, that aggressiveness, I like it. You know, he's like, hey, give me the ball. And he gives his players, his teammates, a really good target to throw it to. And Tristan's got to get better at that.
Yep, I agree with that. And the guys need to get him the ball immediately too, though.
Right.
Like, you know, I'll see them looking at Tristan for 5 minutes and not throwing him the ball, and that's another problem. You can't just keep looking at him. You got to either give it to him or move the ball.
Right.
Don't just stand there and look at him, you know. And so that was definitely something I noticed. You know, one thing I also took away from this game was, you know, King is a guy that I'm seeing the coaches basically tell him when he's open, he needs to shoot the ball.
Right.
And he had one where the ball rolled out to him, and he looked at the rim, didn't shoot it, reversed the ball, and he was pulled the very next possession.
Yeah.
So I think we're finding out that the King is a guy that they want, when he is anywhere near open, to be pulling the trigger. And tonight he was 5 for 8, 8 for 11 from the field.
Yeah.
You know, shoot the ball, King. You know, you're a great scorer, so just play within the offense. But when you get the open look, I think King needs to be shooting that ball. He's clearly the best shooter on this team.
Right. And sometimes, you know, he seems to always, every game, have one charge, offensive charge, where he'll turn down perhaps a decent look, try to get a better look, but it ends up resulting in a turnover or a charge. You know, he was so good when he shot the ball, just as you said, 8 for 11, you know, 5 for 8 from three, and he had 5 turnovers and only 2 assists. So, you know, I think when Mekhi Mason gets out there, it's going to help him a lot, because it's going to take a lot of pressure off of him. And, you know, Jared Butler is going to really help too as he continues to develop, because he's such a good ball handler. But, you know, you're exactly right. We want King to pull the trigger and be one of the primary scorers for sure. Devontae Bandu, another good game.
I think you're exactly right about the Mekhi Mason point, though. You know, getting the ball out of King's hands, having to dribble the ball up, I think will help him. Like you were saying, I think that would be big for him.
Right. Devontae Bandu, he's another guy that played well again. I thought, you know, just another efficient night offensively. I think he ended up 6 for 9 from the field, 16 points, I believe. I don't have the box score in front of me.
He had 16.
Yeah, and you know, the only thing I would say about Devontae, and just an observation that I had defensively, and I think it's just going to be something that's, you know, not his fault, but I've noticed Devontae and even Jared Butler and Matthew Meyer, they're not the longest wingspan guys. So there was a few times where, you know, a short guard was able to post Devontae up and just get a nice, you know, turnaround jumper. And he's in the right position. He just doesn't have the length to contest that well, you know, so that could be something to look for, you know, perhaps guys that are shooting on those guys that are a little bit shorter wingspan guys, you know, their shooting percentages may be higher than we would hope for, you know, defensively.
Yeah. And I noticed you mentioned, so Bandu is a very good scorer. I think we're finding that out. He's going to be a guy that, can put the ball in the basket. I do believe when Mekhi Mason and Mario Kegler come back, I think he will be a guy that will come off the bench and provide a little bit of a spark on the offensive side. But I have some real concerns on the defensive side with him. And you mentioned some of them, but the other ones were the straight line drive.
Right.
He allowed a bunch of them.
Right.
And I noticed it. I noticed it immediately. He was allowing guys to get by him really easily. And between him and I felt like King got beat a couple times off the dribble as well, or was forced to foul, and that's a real concern. And Bandu, I don't know if it was just a lack of effort or a lack of physicality, but something has to change there. He was allowing his guy to get to the rim far too easy for me, or get into the paint far too easy. That's something that needs to be corrected. And as was pointed out, he is a JUCO guy. You know, the stereotype is JUCO does not have much defense, so maybe that's just something he's just going to work on moving forward. And I think he will as he adapts more to the college game. But there's no doubt he can put the ball in the basket.
Yeah, and the effort's there, I think, defensively. But I remember interviewing his JUCO coach, and his coach had nothing but great things to say about him, you know, character-wise, offensive, his skill set offensively. But when I asked about defense, he kind of hem-hawed a little bit. And he just said, you know, well, defense wasn't really our strength. You know, so that kind of told me all I needed to know there. But I think he'll get better. You know, Drew has certain placing more and more emphasis on defense. And I think, you know, you either play good defense or you sit the bench. That's the bottom line.
Yeah, what do you think about them playing so much man-to-man?
Well, I'm not surprised that they're playing a lot of man-to-man, because, you know, usually it's the teams that have, you know, really long wingspan that are better in the zone, and that's not really how they're built this year, at least in, you know, until they get Kegler back. Kegler's a long guy, and then I think he's a terrific defender. Kegler's going to make a big difference defensively when he gets back. He's going to make a big difference all across the board, but you know, certainly on the defensive end, I think another big body, good rebounder, you know, he should be a difference maker that would really help us be able to play more zone or just be more flexible with our defensive strategy. But I kind of expected we'd play a lot of man to man. You know, zone's okay. Hard to teach younger guys.
I was curious on it because to me, just watching, and I agree, they probably can't until Kegler comes back, but I just think Jared Butler is a great point guard for that kind of defense.
Right.
Because he is long, and he's pretty tall, a lot longer and taller than most of the guards Baylor has had recently, and that could really help them be more efficient in that zone. But yes, I agree. Right now it's kind of tough because, you know, you're playing, you know, three guards that don't have the longest wingspan, and so you're pretty susceptible to three in the zone, and you don't get your hand on as much passes. But I'll be interested to see if moving forward they're able to do that a little bit, because I think Butler could do a great job up top in that zone.
You know, there's one thing I want to bring up about Butler that probably did not go noticed by most fans. There were two plays tonight that I thought he made catching a basketball, difficult catches, that I thought were outstanding. One was, there was a pass to him that was, I think, from Bandu, and it was cross court. Butler had to fully extend to catch it, and he was off balance when he caught it, and he was able to catch it and save that possession. You know, I was thinking when the pass was made, I was like, well, if we had LeComp or a shorter guard, that would have definitely been a turnover because it would have sailed right over his head. And then there was another one on one of the presses that Prairie View A&M had where the ball was thrown like away behind him and low, and he caught it and in one stride dribbled across the half court line. I think I'm remembering that correctly. But I just, those two plays stand out. I was like, you know, this guy is a lot more athletic than I thought he was as a recruit. You know, I was picturing, I didn't see him play much in AAU ball. I saw him play once. And I was picturing more of like an LJ Rose, a better version of LJ Rose. But I mean, he is head and shoulders better than LJ Rose. I mean, he's more like the Louisiana guy. Yeah, he's more like the Louisiana guys we've had, like Rico Gathers, Lace Dunn, Tweety Carter, as far as his potential to be a huge impact guy for this program.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think we saw some flashes tonight. I wish he wasn't having to start at point guard all game. I wish that he could, you know, be Makai's backup this year to kind of groom him. But, you know, it's good for him. Gets him a lot of experience. I think we're going to see a lot of him this year. Moving forward, there was one thing that I wanted to mention that I just, you know, it's hard to look past it. And, you know, I watched Mark Vidal play, and he plays so hard, and he plays so aggressive all the time, and I love that about him. I think he plays harder than just about any college player I've ever seen. He just flies to the ball, is all over the place. But I'm really worried about his free throw shooting. And I know this has been a reoccurring theme that, you know, it happened last year, but it's been bad again this year. And I'm worried that, you know, as the year progresses and, you know, the games get closer and you're facing tougher competition, I wonder if that doesn't keep him off the court in clutch times. And, you know, that's tough to see. And I don't know if free throw shooting is something you can just change in a year. Like throughout the course of a year, I think it takes an off season to do that. And I'm concerned about it. What do you think about that?
Oh, it's a big concern. You know, as I was looking up the stats, I knew he had a really rough offensive game. I think KenPom gave him a 64 offensive rating. That's pretty bad. But to his credit, he was plus 18 on the plus and minus. You know, when he was on the court, Baylor had a plus 18 advantage. So he does a lot of things that the analogy I like to use for him is that it's almost like having a good running game in football. You know, it just wears you down by the end of the game. And I think his physicality, mentally and physically, will wear other opponents down. And you really don't know all the ripple effects or all the benefits that that has for your team. You know, whether it's tired legs from the opponent and not making layups or not making free throws because they've just been in a street fight with that guy for, you know, 40 minutes. But I agree with you. He's got to be a 60 to 70% free throw shooter, and he's got to calm down offensively. I mean, he took a few bad shots. He had a few bad turnovers as well. And I feel the same way about Darius Allen. I mean, you see the potential, and you see that both those guys can be terrific assets, but they just have to play with a little bit more calmness.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, when Vidal gets a rebound, maybe kick it out instead of trying to, you know, force a bad shot or force a bad turnover. That's definitely something I noticed. And you mentioned Darius Allen. I agree with, you know, talking about some of the shots he took that were a little bit questionable, but I posted in our in the game thread. I'm curious to see your take on this. I don't know that in the open court, Baylor has ever had a player quite as special as he is in the open court. I mean, that dude flies down the court like I haven't seen, and the athleticism is clearly there. And I just think they need to figure out a way to get that guy going on the fast break more because he's special. He does special things in the open court. What do you think about that?
No, I agree. He's very explosive, and his coach, JUCO coach, told me the same thing as well, that was a major strength of his, was transition offense. So whether we throw in some presses, which, you know, that's not really Scott Drew's style, But I think you're seeing the half court trapping, and you know, with half court trapping with guys like Butler and McClure and Allen on the perimeter there, and then you know Vital and Kegler and Meyer, you got some size, and if you can create some turnovers, you might be able to get, you know, 4 to 6 points for guys like Allen that he has the ability to just explode and transition. I agree with that.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty cool to see him get down the court like the way he did. It was just really cool to see him have some good moments. I know there's still a lot of moments that he needs to improve on, but I felt like he had some good moments in there.
Right.
What about Mayer? What did you think of Mayer today?
You know, I'm a big Mayer fan. Another guy like Butler that has exceeded my expectations. Now, of course, people may say, Ashley, you're crazy. He's wild. He's out of control. I mean, probably the funniest moment of the game came when he decided he was going to dunk on two guys and was about 4 feet away from the rim and just kind of spiked the ball, you know, violently downward. And you're like, what are you doing? But I mean, I love the aggressiveness, and you could see flashes. You know, when I see him play, I'm thinking this guy is going to be an all Big 12 player at some point. I mean, he just has that aggressive mindset, and there's going to be some point where it all clicks. Now, you know, one thing his high school coach told me is that he's about a year younger than most of the guys in his class. You know, so he said, you're going to see a rapid growth curve with him, you know, that you're not going to see with other players. You know, sometimes when you get, you know, I hate to pick on Darius Allen, but I mean, you may get a guy that's 22 already. You know, he went to prep school, he spent 2 years in JUCO, and you get him, he's a junior, but he's already 21 or 22 years old. And so, you know, you don't expect as much improvement from guys like that as you do guys that come here at age, you know, 17 or 18. He kind of reminds me of Quincy Acey in that regard. And, you know, where you just, when you first saw Quincy Acey, you're like, man, that guy's going to be really good. He doesn't have it right now, but he's going to be really good at some point.
Yeah, obviously he has moments where he is out of control, takes a bad shot, rushes a shot, and you're going to have those moments because he is a freshman. But I agree with you. There's going to be a point where that kid is going to be able to score on just about anybody.
Right.
The pull-up jump shot I saw him make, I believe it was in the second half, where
yep.
He, you know, got into the lane and just jumped right over the defender, you know, with his 6'8 frame and, you know, put it right in. It's something that I think we're going to see a lot of. That ability to get into the lane and shoot over defenders is something that, you know, we haven't really seen from a Baylor player since Tarian. You know, that ability to get off the dribble and pull up for a jump shot instead of having to get all the way to the rim and being able to be consistent at it. I think that that's going to be something he's going to be very special at. I'd like to see him. He had one drive where he had an easy layup, and I don't know why he rushed it, but it appeared to be a very wide open layup, and that's something that I think will just come with experience.
Right.
But
right.
I agree with you. He's going to be a legitimate scorer in the Big 12, and he's actually defended a little bit better than I expected, which is a nice surprise as well.
Yeah, he has good energy. I think the future is bright with him. And I do have to correct you on something, because I know Willie Rick is listening to this probably. Matthew Meyer is 6'9". He's officially measured at 6'9", and I didn't want to let that comment slide by and to have Willie. Yeah, exactly. And you know, Willie Rick, he's big on that. He's like, the guy's 6'7", the guy's 6'8", and so I have to always you know, correct him when he puts misinformation out like that. So I didn't want that to go unchecked. All right, so I got a 5:45 pickup basketball game. So before we go, though, we need to talk about some Big 12 action. And there were a lot of other close games tonight. And, you know, most of these games, the Big 12 teams went undefeated tonight and they pulled away late. But Iowa State beat Texas Southern by 12 points in Ames. Oklahoma ended up beating UTSA by 20, but they were down in the second half. Texas kind of struggled with Louisiana Monroe, 65-55. And then two games that I had on the television as I was preparing for this podcast, was Kansas. You know, they were struggling with Vermont. They ended up winning 84-68. Their senior guard, the name's escaping me now, but the one that beat up the women's basketball player a couple years ago, he was 8-for-8 from three. The kid from Memphis, LeGerald Vick, yeah. He was big time for them. I mean, Self was trying to push him out the door, and he came back to school. They wouldn't have won that game without him. He had 32 points. So he was the kind of story for Kansas.
Be big for them.
Yeah, yeah.
I had a buddy that was at the Oklahoma UTSA game, and he told me that Oklahoma's not very good. So that was interesting to hear. He said that they were really struggling with UTSA, who is down their best player. UTSA is. So
interesting.
Definitely something to look at there. I had a feeling OU was probably going to be at the bottom of the Big 12 anyways this year, but that kind of reaffirms it a little bit. The one I was surprised about was Kansas State only winning by 8 against Denver.
I was watching that.
A lot of people have Kansas State as a possible threat to Kansas.
Yeah, the Pioneers, they gave them a game. They were they were right there with them. That was another game that was 3 to 4 points down the stretch, and then Kansas State kind of pulled away late. So we're not the only team struggling with these early season games. There's other teams that are trying to find their mojo. You know, obviously West Virginia lost to Buffalo on their home court. TCU, Texas Christian University, they beat Oral Roberts yesterday, and they're down two of their players, Jalen Fisher and Kuat Noai. So they're kind of like us in that they've got two impact players out. But it's exciting. Basketball's here, and this is a great time of year because we got football and basketball going on at the same time. And it's always fun to, have multiple sports going on where you can cheer on your Bears. Any other closing comments,
no doubt.
Grayson?
No, nothing really. Just a nice performance late by Baylor. Not the greatest overall performance, but a really nice spurt, and they were able to get the win, and I felt like maybe they're trending in the right direction a little bit. Still tons of improvement to go, but definitely a good win tonight, I felt like.
No doubt about it. And thanks again to all of our sponsors. We got to give a shout-out to Barnett's Pub, who does a great job with the tailgates and has been a great sponsor for us. Also, the Baylor Club. We host some events at the Baylor Club. They've always been gracious to give us the space and allow us to do a couple events there every year. And then we've got Brazos Parking. We have great tailgates only because Brazos Parking provides that spot for us. And so thank you to them. And then, of course, Wright House Realty. We can't fail to mention Donald and all of his generosity. So thanks again, Grayson, and looking forward to doing more podcasts with you during basketball season.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on, Ashley.
All right.